Words appear. It is the stated position of the U.S. Air Force that their safeguards would prevent the occurrence of such events as are depicted in this film. Furthermore, it should be noted that none of the characters portrayed in this film are meant to represent any real persons, living or dead. In a logo, a statue of a woman on a pedestal holding aloft a torch. Colombia. A barren, rugged landscape pokes up through dense cloud cover.
For more than a year, ominous rumors had been privately circulating among high-level Western leaders that the Soviet Union had been at work on what was darkly hinted to be the ultimate weapon, a doomsday device. Intelligence sources traced the site of the top-secret Russian project to the perpetually fog-shrouded wasteland below the Arctic peaks of the Zhukov Islands. What they were building, or why it should be located in such a remote and desolate place, no one could say.
Thrusting upward, the shaft of the supplying apparatus achieves contact with the receiving equipment. As the necessary fluids are transferred, the coupled aircraft fly in tandem. Words appear. Columbia Pictures Corporation presents a Stanley Kubrick production, starring Peter Sellers, George C. Scott, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Copyright 1963, Hawk Films Limited. Co-starring Sterling Hayden, Keenan Wynn, Slim Pickens, with Peter Bull, James Earl Jones, Tracy Reed, Jack Creeley, and Frank Berry, Robert O'Neill, Glenn Beck, Roy Stevens, Shane Rimmer, Hal Khalili, Paul Tamarin, Lawrence Herder, Gordon Tanner, John McCarthy, Art Director Peter Merton, Camera Operator Kelvin Pike, Wardrobe Bridget Sellers, Production Manager Lifton Brandon, Camera Assistant Bernard Ford, Assistant Director Eric Rattray, Continuity Pamela Carlton, Special Effects Wally Beavers, Dubbing Mixer John Aldred, Makeup Stuart Freeborn, Traveling Matt Vic Maguti, Sound Editor Leslie Hodgson, Hairdresser Barbara Ritchie, Recordist Richard Bird, Assistant Editor Ray Lovejoy, Aviation Advisor Captain John Crutzen, Sound Supervisor John Cox, Assembly Editor Jeffrey Fry, Main Title by Pablo Ferrer. The producers gratefully acknowledge the assistance of Solartron Electronics, Marconi's Wireless Telegraph, Telephone Manufacturing, British Oxygen. Music by Laurie Johnson, Director of Photography Gilbert Taylor, Film Editor Anthony Harvey, Production Designer Ken Adam, Associate Producer Victor Linden. Screenplay by Stanley Kubrick, Terry Southern, and Peter George, based on the book Red Alert by Peter George. Directed and produced by Stanley Kubrick. At an airport. A radar antenna mast rotates. A U.S. Air Force jet takes off. In a computer room, a mustached man in uniform takes hold of the printout spooling from a large printer. He walks to the next room, where another military man hands him a telephone.
General Ripper, sir.
Group Captain Mandrake speaking.
This is General Ripper speaking.
With a cigar in his mouth.
You recognize my voice, Mandrake?
I do, sir. Why do you ask?
Why do you think I ask?
Well, I don't know, sir. We spoke just a few moments ago on the phone, didn't we?
You don't think I'd ask if you recognized my voice unless it was pretty damned important, do you, Mandrake?
No, I don't, sir, no.
All right, let's see if we can stay on the ball. Has the wing confirmed holding at their failsafe points?
Yes, sir, the confirmations have all just come in.
Very well, now listen to me carefully. The base is being put on condition red. I want this flashed to all sections immediately.
Condition red, sir, yes. Jolly good idea. I keep the men on their toes.
Group Captain, I'm afraid this is not an exercise.
Not an exercise, sir.
I shouldn't tell you this, Mandrake, but you're a good officer and you have a right to know. It looks like we're in a shooting war.
Hell. Are the Russians involved, sir?
Mandrake, that's all I've been told. I just came in on the red phone. My orders are for this base to be sealed tight, and that's what I mean to do. Seal it tight. Now, I want you to transmit Plan R, R for Robert, to the wing.
Plan R for Robert.
Is it that bad, sir?
It looks like it's pretty hairy.
Yes, sir. Plan
R for Robert, sir.
Now, last, and possibly most important, I want all privately owned radios to be immediately impounded.
Yes, sir.
They might be used to issue instructions to saboteurs. As I previously arranged, Air Police will have lists of all owners, and I want every single one of them collected without exception.
Yes, sir.
And after you've done that, report back to me.
Yes, sir.
General Ripper gets up from his desk and closes the window blinds in his office. Aircraft fly in formation.
In order to guard against surprise nuclear attack, America's Strategic Air Command maintains a large force of B-52 bombers airborne 24 hours a day. Each B-52 can deliver a nuclear bomb load of 50 megatons, equal to 16 times the total explosive force of all the bombs and shells used by all the armies in World War II. Based in America, the Airborne Alert Force is deployed from the Persian Gulf to the Arctic Ocean, but they have one geographical factor in common. They are all 2 hours from their targets inside Russia.
In a B-52 cockpit. A pilot reads Playboy magazine. He examines the centerfold. The radio operator jots something down while his neighbor shuffles a deck of cards. Another airman lies down and eats a snack. The pilot dozes off. Code letters click into place on the dashboard. FGD-135. The radio operator looks at his watch. He opens a loose-leaf binder titled Top Secret Aircraft Communications Codes, flips through the pages, looks up the code FGD-135, Wing Attack Plan R.
Major Kong, I know you think this is crazy, but I just got a message from base over the CRM-114.
Taking another bite of his sandwich.
He called his Wing Attack Plan R. R for Romeo.
The guy lying down gets up.
Goldie, did you say Wing Attack Plan R?
Asks the pilot.
Yes, sir, I have.
Goldie, how many times have I told you guys that I don't want no horsing around on the airplane?
I'm not horsing around, sir. That's how it goes.
Well, I've been to one world fair, a picnic, and a rodeo, and that's the stupidest thing I ever heard come over a set of earphones. You sure you got today's code?
Yes, sir, it is.
Oh, there's just gotta be something wrong. Wait a second, I'm coming back.
The pilot, Major Kong, walks back from the cockpit. Goldie shows him the code book. The pilot checks the code letters from the dashboard and the code book, and then the dashboard again. Then rechecks the code book. Drops the code book.
Maybe you better get a confirmation from base.
Yes, sir.
Major Kong returns to the cockpit. Two airmen climb up from a trap door.
Major Kong, is it possible this is some kind of loyalty test? You know, give the go code and then recall to see who would actually go.
Ain't nobody ever got the go code yet. And old Ripper wouldn't be giving us Plan R unless them Ruskies had already clobbered Washington and a lot of other towns with a sneak attack.
Yes, sir.
The airmen go back
Major
down.
Major Kong, message from base confirmed.
Well, boys, I reckon this is it.
Donning a cowboy hat.
Nuclear combat toe-to-toe with the Ruskies.
Retaking his seat. Speaking into a microphone.
Now look, boys, I ain't much of a hand at making speeches. But I got a pretty fair idea that something doggone important's going on back there. And I got a fair idea of the kind of personal emotions that some of you fellas may be thinking. Heck, I reckon you wouldn't even be human beings if you didn't have some pretty strong personal feelings about nuclear combat. But I want you to remember one thing. The folks back home is counting on you, and by golly, we ain't about to let them down. I'll tell you something else. If this thing turns out to be half as important as I figured it just might be, I'd say that you're all in line for some important promotions and personal citations when this thing's over with. That goes for every last one of you, regardless of your race, color, or your creed. Now let's get this thing on the hump. We got some flying to do.
Elsewhere, a woman lies face down in a tanning bed, wearing a bikini and high-heeled shoes.
Buck, should I get it?
She rolls over.
Yeah, you have to.
She turns off the tanning lamp.
Hello? Oh, yes, General Turgidson is here, but I'm afraid he can't come to the phone at the moment. Well, this is his secretary, Miss Scott. Freddie, how are you? Fine, and you? Oh, we were just catching up on some of the General's paperwork.
Removing her sunglasses.
Well, look, Freddie, he's very tied up at the moment. I'm afraid he can't come to the phone. Oh, just a minute. General Turgidson, a Colonel Puntridge calling.
Tell him to call back.
Freddie, the General says could you call back in a minute or two? Oh, he says it can't wait.
Find out what he wants.
Freddie, the thing is, the General is in the powder room right now. Could you tell me what it's about? Just a second. Apparently they monitored a transmission about 8 minutes ago from Burpleson Air Force Base. Right. It was directed to the 843rd Bomb Wing on airborne alert. Yeah. It decoded as wing attack, Plan R.
Tell him to call, base commander, Ripper. I have to think of everything on it.
The General suggests you call General Ripper, the 843rd base commander. Oh. All communications are dead.
Ball. Tell him to do it himself.
Freddy, the General asks if you could possibly try again yourself. I see. He says he's tried personally several times, but everything is dead. Even the normal phone lines are shut down.
Turgidson walks over.
Fred, Buck, what's it look like? Yeah. Why, are you sure it's Plan R? Huh. What's cooking on the threat board? Nothing. Nothing at all?
Miss Scott lights a cigarette.
I don't like the look of this, Fred. All right, tell you what you better do, old buddy. You better give Elmo and Charlie a blast and bump everything up to condition red and stand by the blower. I'll get back to you.
What's up?
Nothing. Where's my shorts?
On the floor. Where are you going?
No place. I just thought I might mosey over the war room for a few minutes, see what's doing over there.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
The Air Force never sleeps.
Buck, honey, I'm not sleepy either.
I know how it is, baby. Tell you what you do.
He crawls over across another bed onto hers.
You just start your countdown, and old Bucky will be back here before you can say, blast off.
at the Air Force base.
Your commie has no regard for human life, not even his own. And for this reason, men, I want to impress upon you the need for extreme watchfulness. The enemy may come
individually, or he may come in strength.
Ripper, speaking through a microphone.
He may even come in the uniform of our own troops.
But however he comes, we must stop him. We must not allow him to gain entrance to this base.
Outside, a bin full of radios.
Now, I am going to give you three simple rules. First, trust no one, whatever his uniform or rank, unless he is known to you personally. Second,
anyone or anything that approaches within 200 yards of the perimeter is to be fired upon. Third,
if in doubt, shoot first and ask questions afterwards.
Mandrake, in the computer room.
Casualties through accident, then lose the entire base and its personnel through carelessness. Any variation on these rules must come from me personally.
Mandrake turns off all the lights.
Now, men, in conclusion, I would like to say that in the 2 years that has been my privilege to be your commanding officer,
walks to a printer in the outer room.
The best from you, and you have never given me anything less than that.
Picks up a portable radio. Rushes out of the room. In the B-52. An airman rotates the dial on a safe. The inside of the safe door, adorned with pinups, flips through folders labeled Top Secret. Takes out folder R, closes the safe.
Here's the attack profile, sir.
Hands it to the pilot, Major Kahn. The folder contains 5 thick envelopes. The pilot hands back 3 of them. Hands one to the co-pilot. Opens his envelope, labeled Pilot. The other envelopes are distributed among the crew.
Attack profile. To ensure that the enemy cannot monitor voice transmission or plant false transmission, the CRM-114 is to be switched into all the receiver circuits. The emergency base code prefix is to be set on the dials of the CRM. This will block any transmission other than those preceded by a code prefix. Stand by to set code prefix.
Roger. Ready to set code prefix.
Set code prefix.
Goldie rotates the letters to spell O P E.
Code prefix set.
Lock code prefix.
Slides open a cover plate, flips a switch, then slides back the cover plate.
Code prefix locked.
Switch all receiver circuits to CRM discriminators.
Rotates a knob.
All circuits switch to CRM discriminators.
Check all the destruct circuits.
Lifts a plate, flips some switches.
Auto-destruct circuits checked.
The plane continues to fly over barren, icy, mountainous terrain.
Primary target, the ICBM complex at Laputa. Target reference, Yankee Golf Tango 360. 30 megaton nuclear device used for airburst at 10,000 feet. 20 megaton nuclear device will be used if first malfunction.
The others read along in their top secret instructions.
Missile complex, 7 miles east of Barshaw. Target reference, November Bravo X-ray 108. Used airburst at 10. Check, 12,000 feet.
At the Air Force base, Mandrake walks down an otherwise empty corridor, carrying the radio. Enters General Ripper's immense office.
Excuse me, sir. Something rather interesting has just cropped up. Listen to that. Music. Civilian broadcasting. I think those fellas in the Pentagon have given us some sort of exercise to test our readiness. Personally, I think it's taking things a bit too far. Our fellas will be inside Russian radar cover in about 20 minutes.
Checking his watch.
Listen to that. Truck block full of stations, all churning it out.
Mandrake?
Yes, sir?
I thought I issued instructions for all radios on this base to be impounded.
Well, you did indeed, sir, and I was in the process of impounding this very wire when I happened to switch it on.
Ripper gets up.
I thought to myself, our fellows hitting Russian radar cover in 20 minutes, dropping all their stuff. I'd better tell you, because if they do, it'll cause a bit of a sting, huh?
Ripper goes to the door.
Through, Captain. The officer exchange program does not give you any special prerogatives to question my orders.
I realize that, sir, but I thought you'd be rather pleased to hear the news. And after all, let's face it, we don't want to start a nuclear war unless we really have to, do we?
Please sit down and turn that thing off.
Yes, sir. What about the plane, sir? Surely we must issue the recall code immediately.
Group Captain, the planes are not going to be recalled. My attack orders have been issued and the orders stand.
Well, if you'll excuse me saying so, sir, that would be, to my way of thinking, rather an odd way of looking at it. You see, if a Russian attack was in progress, we would certainly not be hearing civilian broadcasting.
Are you certain of that, Mandrake?
No, that's a bit positive, my dear, sir.
And what if it is true?
Well, I'm afraid I'm still not with you, sir, because, I mean, if a Russian attack was not in progress, then your use of Plan R, in fact, your order to the entire wing, Well, I would say, sir, that there was something dreadfully wrong somewhere.
Now, why don't you just take it easy, Group Captain? And please make me a drink of grain alcohol and rainwater and help yourself to whatever you'd like.
Puts the radio down on the desk.
General Ripper, sir.
Saluting.
As an officer in Her Majesty's Air Force, it is my clear duty, under the present circumstances, to issue the recall code upon my own authority and bring back the wing. If you'll excuse me, sir.
He turns and goes to the door. Finding it locked, he tries a second door.
I'm afraid, sir, I must ask you for the key and the recall code. Have you got them handy, sir?
I told you to take it easy, Group Captain. There's nothing anybody can do about this thing now. I'm the only person who knows the three-letter code group.
Then I must insist, sir, that you give them to me.
Ripper glares at him from behind an upward-slanting cigar. Pushes aside a folder, revealing a gun.
Do I take it, sir, that you're threatening a brother officer with a gun?
Mandrake, I suppose it never occurred to you that while we're chatting here so enjoyably, a decision is being made by the President and the Joint Chiefs in the war room at the Pentagon. And when they realize there is no possibility of recalling the wing, there will be only one course of action open. Total commitment. Mandrake, do you recall what Clemenceau once said about war?
No, I don't think I do, sir, no.
He said war was too important to be left to the generals. When he said that, 50 years ago, he might have been right. But today, war is too important to be left to politicians. They have neither the time, the training, nor the inclination for strategic thought.
Removing the cigar from his mouth.
I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
At the war room in the Pentagon, a couple dozen men sit around a large circular table below huge displays of world maps.
Stan, is everybody here? Mr. President, the Secretary of State is in Vietnam, the Secretary of Defense is in Laos, and the Vice President is in Mexico City.
We can establish contact with them at any time if it's necessary. The undersecretaries are all here, of course.
Right. Now, General Turgeson, what's going on here?
Mr. President.
Behind a binder labeled World
about,
Targets and Megadeaths.
35 minutes ago, General Jack Ripper, the commanding general of Burpleson Air Force Base, issued an order to the 34 B-52s of his wing, which were airborne at the time, as part of a special exercise we were holding called Operation Dropkick. Now, it appears that the order called for the planes to attack their targets inside Russia. The planes are fully armed with nuclear weapons with an average load of 40 megatons each. Now, the central display of Russia will indicate the position of the planes.
Lights flash on the huge map on the wall.
The triangles are their primary targets. The squares are their secondary targets. The aircraft will begin penetrating Russian radar cover within 25 minutes.
General Turgidson, I find this very difficult to understand. I was under the impression that I was the only one in authority to order the use of nuclear weapons.
That's right, sir.
Taking a stick of chewing gum.
You are the only person authorized to do so. And although I hate to judge before all the facts are in, it's beginning to look like General Ripper exceeded his authority.
It certainly does. Far beyond the point I would have imagined possible.
Well, perhaps you're forgetting the provisions of Plan R, sir.
Plan R?
Plan R is an emergency war plan in which a lower echelon commander may order nuclear retaliation after a sneak attack if the normal chain of command has been disrupted. You approved it, sir, you must remember. Surely you must recall, sir, when Senator Buford made that big hassle about our deterrent lacking credibility. The idea was for Plan R to be a sort of retaliatory safeguard.
A safeguard?
I admit the human element seems to have failed us here, but the idea was to discourage the Ruskies from any hope that they could knock out Washington and yourself, sir, as part of a general sneak attack and escape retaliation because of lack of proper command and control.
Well, I assume then that the planes will return automatically once they reach their fail-safe points.
Well, no, sir, I'm afraid not. You see, the planes were holding at their fail-safe points when the go code was issued. Now, once they fly beyond fail-safe, they do not require a second order to proceed. They will continue until they reach their target.
Then why haven't you radioed the planes countermanding the go code?
Well, I'm afraid we're unable to communicate with any of the aircraft.
Why?
As you may recall, sir, one of the provisions of Plan R provides that once the go code is received, the normal SSB radios in the aircraft are switched into a special coded device, which I believe is designated as CRM-114. Now, in order to prevent the enemy from issuing fake or confusing orders, CRM-114 is designed not to receive at all, unless the message is preceded by the correct three-letter code group prefix.
Taking another stick of gum.
Then do you mean to tell me, General Turgidson, that you will be unable to recall the aircraft?
That's about silence. However, we are plowing through every possible three-letter combination of the code.
But since there are 17,000 permutations, it's going to take us about 2.5 days to transmit them all.
How soon did you say the planes would penetrate Russian radar cover?
About 18 minutes from now, sir.
Are you in contact with General Ripper?
No, sir, no. General Ripper sealed off the base and cut off all communication.
Where did you get all this information?
General Ripper called Strategic Air Command headquarters shortly after he issued the go code. I have a portion of the transcript of that conversation if you'd like me to read it.
Read it.
The duty officer asked General Ripper to confirm the fact that he had issued the go code, and he said,
Yes, gentlemen, they are on their way in, and no one can bring them back. For the sake of our country and our way of life, I suggest you get the rest of SAC in after them. Otherwise, we will be totally destroyed by Red retaliation. My boys will give you the best kind of start, 1,400 megatons worth, and you sure as hell won't stop them now. So let's get going. There's no other choice. God willing, we will prevail in peace and freedom from fear and in true health through the purity and essence of our natural fluids. God bless you all.
Removing his glasses.
Then he hung up. We're still trying to figure out the meaning of that last phrase, sir.
There's nothing to figure out, General Turgidson. This man is obviously a psychotic.
Well, I'd like to hold off judgment on a thing like that, sir, until all the facts are in.
General Turgidson, when you instituted the human reliability tests, you assured me there was no possibility of such a thing ever occurring.
Well, I don't think it's quite fair to condemn a whole program because of a single slip-up, sir.
I want to speak to General Ripper on the telephone personally.
I'm afraid that's impossible, sir.
General Turgidson, I am becoming less and less interested in your estimates of what is possible and impossible.
Another stick of gum.
General Faceman.
Yes, sir.
Are there any Army units stationed anywhere near Burfelson?
I'll just check, sir.
Hello.
Turgidson answers a phone.
I told you never to call me here. Don't you know where I am? Well, look, baby, I can't talk to you now, but my president needs me. Of course,
Mr.
Bucky
president,
would rather be there with
about
you.
Civil defense?
Of course, it isn't only physical. I deeply respect you as a human being. Someday I'm going to make you Mrs. Buck Turgidson. Listen, you go back to sleep, huh? And Bucky will be back there just as soon as he can. All right? Listen, Shug, don't forget to say your prayers.
He resumes an attentive posture. General Faceman consults a notebook.
Apparently, the 23rd Airborne Division is stationed 7 miles away at Alvarado.
General Faceman, I want them to enter the base, locate General Ripper, and put him in immediate telephone contact with me.
Yes, sir.
Mr. President, if I may advise, under condition red, it is standard procedure that the base be sealed off and the base defended by base security troops. Any force trying to enter there would certainly encounter very heavy casualties.
General Turgidson, with all due respect for your defense team, my boys can brush them aside without too much trouble.
Mr. President, there are one or two points I'd like to make, if I may.
Go ahead, General.
One, our hopes for recalling the 843rd Bomb Wing are quickly being reduced to a very low order of probability.
Two, in less than 15 minutes from now, the Ruskies will be making radar contact with the planes. Three, when they do, they are going to go absolutely ape, and they're going to strike back with everything they got. Four, if, prior to this time, we have done nothing further to suppress their retaliatory capabilities, we will suffer virtual annihilation. Now.
With a smirk.
Five. If, on the other hand, we were to immediately launch an all-out and coordinated attack on all their airfields and missile bases, we'd stand a damn good chance of catching them with their pants down. Hell, we got a 5-to-1 missile superiority as it is. We could easily assign 3 missiles to every target and still have a very effective reserve force for any other contingency. Six, an unofficial study.
Flipping open
a
binder.
This eventuality indicated that we would destroy 90% of their nuclear capabilities. We would therefore prevail and suffer only modest and acceptable civilian casualties from the remaining force, which would be badly damaged and uncoordinated.
Smiling.
General, it is the avowed policy of our country never to strike first with nuclear weapons.
Well, Mr. President, I would say that General Ripper has already invalidated that policy.
That was not an act of national policy, and there are still alternatives left open to us.
Mr. President, we are rapidly approaching a moment of truth, both for ourselves as human beings and for the life of our nation. Now, truth is not always a pleasant thing. But it is necessary now to make a choice, to choose between two admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless distinguishable post-war environments. One where you got 20 million people killed, and the other where you got 150 million people killed.
You're talking about mass murder, General, not war.
Mr. President, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed, but I do say no more than 10 to 20 million killed, tops, depending on the breaks.
I will not go down in history as the greatest mass murderer since Adolf Hitler.
Perhaps it might be better, Mr. President, if you were more concerned with the American people than with your image in the history books.
General Turgidson, I think I've heard quite sufficient from you. Thank you very much.
Mr. President, they have the ambassador waiting upstairs.
Oh, good. Any difficulty?
They say he's having a fit about that squad of MPs.
Yes, well, that can't be helped. Have him brought down here straight away.
Yes, sir.
Is that the Russian ambassador you're talking about?
Yes, it is, General.
Am I to understand the Russian ambassador is to be admitted entrance to the war room?
That is correct. He is here on my orders.
I don't know exactly how to put this, sir, but are you aware of what a serious breach of security that would be? I mean, you'll see everything. You'll see the big board.
Pointing at the map on the wall.
That is precisely the idea, General. That is precisely the idea. Staines, get Premier Kissoff on the hotline.
In the B-52.
Survival kit contents check.
The airmen opened their kits.
In them you'll find 145 caliber automatic, 2 boxes of ammunition, 4 days concentrated emergency rations, 1 drug issue containing antibiotics, morphine, vitamin pills, pep pills, sleeping pills, tranquilizer pills, 1 miniature combination Russian phrase book and Bible, $100 in rubles, $100 in gold, 9 packs of chewing gum, 1 issue of prophylactics, 3 lipsticks, 3 pair of nylon stockings. Shoot, a fella could have a pretty good weekend in Vegas with all that stuff.
In the war room, a stocky man in a dark coat approaches a dimly lit buffet table.
You don't have any fresh fish?
I'm afraid not, sir.
Your eggs, then, they are fresh?
Oh, yes, sir.
I will have poached eggs. And bring me some cigars, please. Havana cigars.
And that will be all for you, sir?
Yes.
And I'll see to it right away.
Try one of these Jamaican cigars, Ambassador. They're pretty good.
Thank you, no. I do not support the work of imperialist stooges.
Oh, only commie stooges, huh?
The Russian ambassador walks away.
You're gonna let that lousy commie punk vomit all over us like this?
Clutching a binder.
Mr. President?
We haven't been able to reach Premier Kissoff in the Kremlin. They say they don't know where he is and he won't be back for another 2 hours.
Try B86543 Moscow.
Yes, sir.
You would never have found him through his office, Mr. President. Our premier is a man of the people, but he is also a man, if you follow my meaning. What did you say?
I said Premier Kissoff is a degenerate atheist.
Mr. President, I formally request that you have his ignorant proof.
I'm sorry,
Mr. President. I think they're trying the number.
The president walks toward the phone.
Turchinson
grabs the Russian from behind, walks backward to a bench, whereupon the Russian sits upon him.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room. What is going on here? I demand an explanation.
This clumsy fool tried to plant that ridiculous camera on me.
Yeah, you bet your sweets, Mr. Commie. Look at this, Mr. President. This lousy commie rat was taking pictures with this thing of the big board. Mr. Ambassador.
Grabbing the camera.
This clumsy fool attempted to plant that ridiculous camera on me.
That's a damn lie. I saw him with my own eyes.
Miss Gentleman, this is outrageous. I have never heard of such behavior in the war room before.
Mr. President, I think they're getting him on the line.
Viewed through binoculars, a convoy of army jeeps approaches the Air Force base. Lowering his binoculars.
You sure got ahead of those commies?
Yeah.
Gee, those trucks sure look like the real thing, don't they?
I wonder where they got them from.
Probably bought them from the army as war surplus.
Okay. Open up at 200 yards.
Soldiers run out of the army jeeps and shoot toward the Air Force base. The battle proceeds in all directions. In Ripper's office. Mandrake looks at his watch. Ripper puffs on his cigar. In the war room.
Tell him where you are, and that you'll enter the conversation if I say anything that's untrue, but please don't tell him anything more than that. Alexei, please, I beg you.
But I don't have a phone.
Give me a phone, Frank.
Frank hands the ambassador a phone.
Tovarish Petsidatil, Gavrita Satsky. Yas prezidentem merken mafia v Pentagonia. Um prozit mines kazach, to yez leonsh kazuch, to nibut natak. Ya dolzhen yevo provach. Da. Horosho. Panyato, tovarish Petsidatil.
I've done as you asked. Be careful, Mr. President. I think he is drunk.
Hello? Hello, Dmitri. Listen, I can't hear too well. Do you suppose you could turn the music down just a little? Oh, that's much better. Yeah.
Turgidson unwraps a stick of gum.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dmitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then... Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, then, and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine. Now then, Dmitri, you know how we've always talked about the possibility of something going wrong with the bomb. The bomb, Dmitri. The hydrogen bomb. Well, now, what happened is... One of our base commanders, he had a sort of, well, he went a little funny in the head. You know, just a little funny. And he went and did a silly thing. Well, I'll tell you what he did. He ordered his planes to attack your country. Well, let me finish, Dmitri. Let me finish, Dmitri. Well, listen, how do you think I feel about it? Can you imagine how I feel about it, Dmitri?
A half dozen men listening in.
Why do you think I'm calling you? Just to say hello? Of course I like to speak to you. Of course I like to say hello. Not now, but any time, Dmitri. I'm just calling up to tell you something terrible has happened. It's a friendly call. Of course it's a friendly call. Listen, if it wasn't friendly... You probably wouldn't have even got it. They will not reach their targets for at least another hour. I am positive, Dmitri. Listen, I've been all over this with your ambassador. It is not a trick. Well, I'll tell you. We'd like to give your air staff a complete rundown on the targets, the flight plans, and the defensive systems of the plane. Yes, I mean, if we're unable to recall the planes, then I'd say that, we're just going to have to help you destroy them, Dmitri.
Turgidson turns his head and glares at him.
I know there are boys. All right, well, listen, now who should we call? Who should we call, Dmitri? You faded away there. The People's Central Air Defense Headquarters. Where is that, Dmitri? In Omsk, right? Yes. Oh, you're calling first, will you? Uh-huh. Listen, do you happen to have the phone number on you, Dmitri? What? I see. Just ask for Omsk information.
Turgidson scratches his head.
I'm sorry, too, Dmitri. I'm very sorry. All right, you're sorrier than I am. But I am sorry as well. I am as sorry as you are, Dmitri. Don't say that you're more sorry than I am, because I'm capable of being just as sorry as you are. So we're both sorry, all right? All right. Yes, he's right here. Yes, he wants to talk to you. Just a second.
The ambassador speaks into his phone.
Товарищ председатель, говорит Досадский. Да? Да?
The ambassador's face hardens, and he looks down.
Adjutant, actually. Нет.
Turgidson furrows his brow.
Может быть. Дураки!
До свидания. What? What is this? What?
The fools. The mad fools.
What's happened?
The doomsday machine.
The doomsday machine? What is that?
A device which will destroy all human and animal life on Earth.
All human and animal life?
Turgidson smirks and nods his head. In Ripper's office, Mandrake nervously fingers a stick of gum. Ripper sits down next to Mandrake and puts his arm around him.
Mandrake.
Yes, Dad?
Have you ever seen a commie drink a glass of water?
Well, yeah, I can't say I have.
Fidgeting with the gum.
Vodka. That's what they drink, isn't it? Never water.
Well, I believe that's what they drink, Jack, yes.
On no account will a commie ever drink water, and not without good reason.
Yes. I can't quite see what you're getting at, Jack.
Water. That's what I'm getting at, water. Mandrake, water is the source of all life. 7/10 of this Earth's surface is water. Why do you realize that 70% of you is water?
Oh, Lord.
And as human beings, you and I need fresh, pure water to replenish our precious bodily fluids.
Yes.
Are you beginning to understand?
Yes.
Mandrake. Mandrake, have you never wondered why I drink only distilled water or rainwater and only pure grain alcohol?
Well, it did occur to me, Jack, yes.
Have you ever heard of a thing called fluoridation of water?
Yes, I have heard of that, Jack, yes.
Well, do you know what it is?
No. No, I don't know what it is now.
Do you realize that fluoridation is the most monstrously conceived and dangerous communist plot we have ever had to face?
Incoming fire knocks a picture off the wall.
Come and play another game, soldier!
Papers flutter. A lighting fixture crashes down from the ceiling.
That's nice shooting, soldier!
The room now darkened but for a small table lamp. Ripper goes across the room, grabs a golf bag, and turns off the remaining light. He struggles to pull a machine gun out of the golf bag. Swats papers off his desk with the gun.
Mandrake, come here.
You calling me, Jack?
Come over here and help me with this belt.
Ripper takes out an ammunition belt several feet long.
I haven't had very much experience, you know, with those sort of machines, Jack. I've only ever pressed a button in my old Spitfire.
Mandrake, in the name of Her Majesty and the Continental Congress, come here and feed me this belt, boy.
Jack, I'd love to come. But what's happened, you see? The string in my leg's gone.
The what?
And the string. I never told you, but you see, got a gammy leg. Oh, dear. Gone, shot off.
Mandrake, come over here. The redcoats are coming. Come on.
In the war room.
When it is detonated,
the Russian ambassador stands up.
Radioactive fallout, so that within 10 months, the surface of the Earth will be as dead as the moon.
Turgidson gets up.
That's ridiculous. Our studies show that even the worst fallout is down to a safe level after 2 weeks.
You've obviously never heard of cobalt thorium G.
Well, what about it?
about thorium G has a radioactive half-life of 93 years. If you take, say, 50 H-bombs in the 100 megaton range and jacket them with cabal thorium G, when they are exploded, they will produce a doomsday shroud, a lethal cloud of radioactivity which will encircle the Earth for 93 years.
Oh, what a load of commie bull. I mean, after all.
The president gets up.
Afraid I don't understand something, Alexei. Is the premier threatening to explode this if our planes carry out their attack?
No, sir. It is not a thing a sane man would do. The doomsday machine is designed to trigger itself automatically.
But surely you can disarm it somehow?
No. It is designed to explode if any attempt is ever made to untrigger it.
Automatically?
Ah, it's an obvious commie trick, Mr. President. We're wasting valuable time.
Turgidson falls, but gets back up.
Getting ready to clobber us!
But this is absolute madness, Ambassador. Why should you build such a thing?
There are those of us who fought against it. But in the end, we could not keep up with the expense involved in the arms race, the space race, and the peace race. And at the same time, our people grumbled for more nylons and washing machines. Our doomsday scheme cost us just a small fraction of what we've been spending on defense in a single year. But the deciding factor was when we learned that your country was working along similar lines, and we were afraid of a doomsday gap.
This is preposterous. I've never approved of anything like that.
Our source was the New York Times.
Dr. Strangelove, do we have anything like that in the works?
A moment, please, Mr. President.
Strangelove backs his wheelchair away from the table.
Under the authority...
wheels himself toward the president.
As Director of Weapons Research and Development, I commissioned last year a study of this project by the Bland Corporation. Based on the findings of the report, my conclusion was that this idea was not a practical deterrent for reasons which at this moment must be all too obvious.
Then you mean it is possible for them to have built such a thing?
His trembling gloved right hand takes the cigarette out of his mouth.
Mr. President, the technology required is easily within the means of even the smallest nuclear power. It requires only the will to do so.
But how is it possible for this thing to be triggered automatically and at the same time impossible to untrigger?
Mr. President, it is not only possible, it is essential. That is the whole idea of this machine, you know.
With a wide grin.
Deterrence is the art of producing in the mind of the enemy the fear to attack.
Turgidson listens intently.
Because of the automated and irrevocable decision-making process which rules out human meddling, the doomsday machine is terrifying. It's simple to understand and completely credible and convincing.
Gee, I wish we had one of them doomsday machines, Stacy.
But this is fantastic, Strangelove. How can it be triggered automatically?
Well, it's remarkably simple to do that. When you merely wish to bury bombs, there's no limit to the size. After that, they are connected to a gigantic complex of computers. Now then, a specific and clearly defined set of circumstances under which the bombs are to be exploded is programmed into a tape memory bank. A single roll of
Strangler
can store all the information.
What kind of a name is that? That ain't no crowd name, is it, Stanley? He changed it when he became a citizen. It used to be McVictic Liebe.
A crowd by any other name, I suppose.
Is that the whole point of the doomsday machine?
Still smiling.
Is lost.
If you keep it a secret, why didn't you tell the world, eh?
It was to be announced at the party congress on Monday. As you know, the premier loves surprises.
At the Air Force Base, a billboard proclaims, "Peace is our profession." The fighting approaches the headquarters building. In Ripper's office, the remaining pictures fall. Ripper shoots his machine gun toward the window. Andrig ducks in covers under a desk chair.
Hey, where's it, Andrig?
They crawl through the debris on the floor.
Right, Andrig, now please.
Ripper gets up and resumes shooting. He sits back down on the floor.
Jack, don't you think we'd be better off in some other part of the room away from all this flying glass?
No, we're okay here.
They remain on the floor.
Mandry, you realize that in addition to fluoridating water, where there are studies underway to fluoridate salt, flour, fruit juices, soup, sugar, milk, ice cream, Mandry, children's ice cream.
Good. You know when fluoridation first began?
No, I don't yet.
1946. 1946, Mandrake. How does that coincide with your post-war commie conspiracy? It's incredibly obvious, isn't it? A foreign substance is introduced into our precious bodily fluids without the knowledge of the individual. Certainly without any choice. That's the way your hardcore commie works.
Hey, Jack, listen, tell me, Jack, when did you first develop this theory?
Well, I first became aware of it, Mandrake, during the physical act of love.
Huh?
Yes, a profound sense of fatigue. Feeling of emptiness followed. Luckily, I was able to interpret these feelings correctly. Loss of essence. I can assure you it has not recurred, Mandrake. Women sense my power, and they seek the life essence. I do not avoid women, Mandrake.
Yeah.
But I do deny them my essence.
Yes.
The attacking army reaches the building, from which the exiting forces surrender, holding their hands up. In the office.
The boys must have surrendered.
Well, there it is. Now, Jack, listen. While there's still time, I beg you, let's recall the winger.
Ripper gets up, picks some debris aside, and sits on a chair.
Those boys were like my children, Mandrake. Now they let me down.
No, Jack, not a bit of it. No, I'm sure they all gave it their very best. And I'm equally sure they all died thinking of you. Every man, Jack, of them. Jack, supposing a bit of water has gone off, eh? And certainly one can never be too sure about those sort of things, but you look at me now. Do I look all rancid and clotted? You look at me, Jack, eh? Look, eh? And I drink a lot of water, you know. I'm what you might call a water man, Jack. That's what I am. And I can swear to you, my boy, swear to you, that there's nothing wrong with my bodily fluids. Not a thing, Jackie.
Mandrake, were you ever a prisoner of war?
Well, Jack, the time's running... Very... Huh?
Were you ever a prisoner of war?
Yes, I was, matter of fact, Jack, I was.
Did they torture you?
Yes, they did. I was tortured with the Japanese, Jack, if you must know. Not a pretty story.
Well, what happened?
Oh, well, I don't know, Jack. Difficult to think of under these conditions, but... Well, what happened was they got me on the old Rangoon Ichinawa Railway. I was laying... Train lines for the bloody Japanese puff-puffs.
No, I mean, when they tortured you, did you talk?
I don't think they wanted me to talk, really. I don't think they wanted me to say anything. It was just their way of having a bit of fun, the swines.
Strange thing is, they make such bloody good cameras.
You know, those clowns outside are going to give me a pretty good going over in a few minutes. For the code.
Yes. Yes, well, you may have quite a point there, Jack.
I don't know how well I could stand up under torture.
Well, of course, the answer to that is, boy, no one ever does. And my advice to you, Jack, is to give me the code now. And if those devils come back and try any rough stuff, we'll fight them together, boy, like we did just now on the floor, eh? You with your gun and me with the belt and the ammo, feeding you, Jack. Feed me, you said, and I was feeding you, Jack.
No, Mandrake. I happen to believe in a life after this one. I know I'll have to answer what I've done. I think I can.
Yes, well, of course you can, Jack. Of course you can. You can. I'm a religious man myself, you know, Jack.
Ripper gets up and walks across the room, dragging the machine gun behind him. Takes off his jacket.
Jack, let me take that for you. I'll take that for you, Jack. And you know what I'm hoping, Jack? I'm hoping you're going to give me the code, boy. That's what I'm hoping. And, you're going to have a little wash and brush up, are you? What a good idea. Always did wonders for a man, that, Jack. A little wash and brush up, water on the back of the neck, and makes you feel marvelous.
Ripper drapes a towel around his shoulders.
Now, supposing I play a little guessing game with you, Jack boy. I'll try and guess what the code is.
Mandrake tries in vain to force the bathroom door open. In the B-52.
Co-pilot to navigator. I'm ready with a few figures now. We have 109,000 total, 79,000 in the mains, and 30,000 in the auxiliaries. And that works out to roughly 7 hours, 15 minutes endurance for this time.
DSO to captain, I have an unidentified radar blip. Distance 60 miles. Approximate speed, Mach 3. Looks like a missile tracking us. Confirmed, definite missile track. Commence evasive action right. Missile still closing range. Distance, 50 miles. Continue evasive action.
Lock ECM to target intercept mode.
ECM locked. Target intercept mode. Missile still tracking and closing distance. Range 40 miles. Continue evasive action. Electronic guidance scrambler to blue grid. Missile still tracking steady and closing distance. Range 30 miles. Missile still closing true and steady. Continue evasive action.
The plane suddenly flies higher, then lower.
Range 20 miles. Missile still closing distance and tracking steady.
Attack range gate on maximum scan.
Range gate on maximum scan.
Range 10 miles. Missile track deflecting. Continue evasive action. Deflection increasing. Range 8 miles. Deflection still increasing, range 6 miles. Missile still deflecting, range 4 miles.
The plane banks sharply into a right turn.
Range 2 miles, missile still deflecting. Range 1 mile, missile detonated.
The plane shakes and catches fire.
Start lever to cut off. Cut off.
The plane wobbles. The crew grab fire extinguishers. The plane falls into a steep descent. Sparks fly throughout the cabin.
Transverse
the plane levels off and continues to fly. In Ripper's office, Mandrake studies the scribbles on a piece of paper on Ripper's desk.
Peace on Earth. P-O-E. Purity of Essence. O-P-O-E. O-P-E.
Incoming fire through the locked door to the office. A soldier, tall, broad-shouldered, and ruggedly ugly, enters, pointing a gun.
Put your hands over your head.
What the devil do you think you're doing, shooting your way in here? Who are you?
I said put your hands over your head. What kind of suit you call that, fella?
What do you mean, suit? This happens to be an RAF uniform, sir. And I am Group Captain Lionel Mandrake. I am General Ripper's executive officer.
Where's General Ripper?
He's dead, in the bathroom.
Where's the bathroom?
Next to you.
The soldier goes and looks in.
Look, I don't know what sort of stupid game this is you're playing, but I've got a very good idea what the recall code is, and I have to get in touch with SAC headquarters immediately.
I said put your hands over your head and keep them there. Come on. Got any witnesses?
Witnesses? What are you talking about, witnesses? He shot himself.
While he was shaving, huh?
Now, look, Colonel Bat Guano, if that really is your name, may I tell you that I have a very, very good idea. I think, I hope, I pray, what the recall code is. It's some sort of recurrent theme he kept repeating. It's a variation on peace on earth or purity of essence. E-O-P, O-P-E, it's one of those.
Put your hands up on top of your head. Start walking.
Don't you know that General Ripper went as mad as a bloody March hare and sent the whole wing to attack the Soviets? Don't you know that?
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I'm going to pick up this red telephone, which is connected to SAC. And I hope... Blast. Shot away, I expect, by one of your men during this ridiculous fighting. Right.
Picking up another telephone.
All right, Charlie, I've been wasting too much time on you. I got a lot of wounded men outside. Start walking.
In the B-52. The co-pilot tries to turn off the auto-destruct, but the switch doesn't work.
All the radio gear is out, including the CRM-114. I think the auto-destruct mechanism got hit and blew itself up.
Says Goldie.
The fire is out. The emergency power is on. Everything seems to check out all right. We'll advise.
Roger, navigator.
I've worked on a rate of fuel loss at approximately 162 per minute. This gives us a radius of action sufficient to take out primary and secondary targets, but we will not, repeat, not be able to make it back to any base or neutral country. However, we would have enough fuel to ditch at Weathership Tango Delta, grid coordinates 003691.
Boys, we got three engines out. We got more holes in us than a horse trader's mule. The radio's gone and we're leaking fuel. If we was flying any lower, why, we'd need sleigh bells on this thing. But we got one little budge on them, Ruskies. At this height, why, they might harpoon us, but they dang sure ain't gonna spot us on no radar screen.
They fly within close sight of the land below. At the Air Force Base, Mandrake walks out of the office with his hands up at gunpoint.
Colonel, I must know what you think has been going on here.
You want to know what I think?
Yes.
I think you're some kind of deviated prevert. I think General Ripper found out about your preversion and that you were organizing some kind of mutiny of preverts. Now move. On top of that, I don't know anything about any planes attacking Russia. All I was told to do was get General Ripper on the phone with the President of the United States.
Now, just one second. You just said the President.
What about the President?
Now, the President wants to speak to General Ripper, doesn't he? Now, General Ripper is dead, is he not?
I am General Ripper's executive officer, so the president will bloody well want to speak to me, won't he? There's a telephone box over there, and the line may be open.
You want to talk to the president of the United States?
I don't want to talk to him, Colonel. I've got to talk to him. And I can assure you, if you don't put that gun away and stop this stupid nonsense, the court of inquiry on this will give you such a pranging, you'll be lucky if you end up wearing the uniform of a bloody toilet attendant.
Okay. Go ahead.
He nods.
Try and get the President of the United States on the phone. If you try any perversions, and I'll blow your head off.
Mandrake reaches into his pocket for coins.
Operator, this is Group Captain Lionel Mandrake. I'm speaking from Burpleson Air Force Base. Look, something very urgent has come up, and I want you to place an emergency person-to-person call with President Merkin Muffley in the Pentagon, Washington, D.C. Burpleson 39180. No, I'm perfectly serious, operator. The president, yes, the president of the United States. Oh, I'm sorry, I haven't got enough change. Could you make this a collect call, operator?
Guano continues to stare at him from just outside the phone booth.
Just one second, operator. They won't accept the call. Have you got 55 cents?
Well, you don't think I'd go into combat with loose change in my pocket, do you?
Operator, look, is it possible to make this an ordinary trunk call? Well, what do you call it? You know, station to station. Oh, blast. I'm still 20 cents short. Operator, hold on one. I shan't give you a second. Colonel, that Coca-Cola machine, I want you to shoot the lock off it. There may be some change in there.
That's private property.
Colonel, can you possibly imagine what is going to happen to you, your frame outlook, way of life and everything, when they learn that you have obstructed a telephone call to the President of the United States? Can you imagine? Shoot it off! Shoot with a gun! That's what the bullets are for, you twit!
Okay. I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
Coins erupt from the wounded vending machine, as it also squirts soda in Guano's face. In the war room.
This is SAC Communications Control. The recall code OPE is being acknowledged, Roger, by elements of the 843 bomb wing.
The men shake each other's hands as the lights on the map show the retreating bombers.
Missions 12, 22, 30, and 38 are reported destroyed by enemy action. All other missions have acknowledged recall code.
The president walks aside.
This is SAC Communications Control. Over and out.
Turgidson whistles.
Gentlemen, gentlemen. President. I'm not a sentimentalist at all by nature, but I think I know what's in every heart in this room. I think we ought to all just bow our heads and give a short prayer of thanks for our deliverance. Lord. We have heard the wings of the angel of death fluttering over our heads from the valley of fear. You have seen fit to deliver us from the forces of evil.
Excuse me, sir,
says a man holding a phone.
Kissoff's calling again, and he's hopping mad.
In the B-52.
Fuel flaw at active engines and leakage has increased. Now works out at 205. Estimate remaining fuel at 8790.
Two airmen look at each other.
Roger, confirm 205 per minute and remaining fuel 8790.
Making notations with pencil and eraser. In the war room.
No, Dimitri, there must be some mistake. No, I'm certain of that. I'm perfectly certain of that, Dimitri.
Just a second. You know what he says? He says that one of the planes hasn't turned back. He says, according to information forwarded by our air staffs, it's headed for the missile complex at Laputa.
That's impossible, Mr. Red. I mean, look at the big board. 34 planes, 30 recalls acknowledged, and 4 splashes. And one of them was targeted for Laputa.
Dimitri, look, we've got an acknowledgement from every plane except the 4 you've shot down. Oh. Hang on a second, Dimitri. He says their air defense now only claims 3 aircraft confirmed. The 4th may only be damaged.
Turgidson shakes his head with suspicion. Person,
I'm beginning to smell a big, fat, commie rat. I mean, supposing Kissoff is lying about that 4th plane, just looking for an excuse to clobber us. I mean, if the spaghetti hits a fan now, we're in trouble.
Dimitri, look, if this report is true and the plane manages to bomb the target, is this gonna set off the doomsday machine? Are you sure? Well, I guess you're just gonna have to get that plane, Dimitri. Dimitri, I'm sorry that jamming your radar and flying so low, but they're trained to do it. You know, it's initiative. Look, Dimitri, you know exactly where they're going, and I'm sure your entire air defense can stop a single plane.
Turgidson, dumbfounded, holds his
Listen,
hand
I
on
mean,
his
head.
Listen,
I mean, it's not going to help either one of us if the doomsday machine goes off now, is it? Dimitri, there's no point in you getting hysterical at a moment like this. Dimitri, keep your feet on the ground when you're talking, Dimitri. I am not getting... no, Dimitri, I'm just worried, that's all. Now, look, if our air staff say its primary target is Laputa and its secondary target is Borkov, I mean, it's true, Dimitri, you gotta believe it. Look, Can I give you just one word of advice, Dimitri? Listen, Dimitri, put everything you've got into those 2 sectors and you can't miss.
In the B-52.
Sir, if we continue to lose fuel at the present rate, I estimate we only have 38 minutes flying time, which will not even take us as far as the primary.
Doggone it, sweet! You told me that you'd get me the primary!
I'm sorry, sir. That estimate was based on the original loss rate factor, not at 205.
I don't give a hoot in hell how you do it. You just get me the primary, you hear?
I'm sorry, sir, but those are the figures. We'll be lucky to reach weathership at Tango Delta.
Well, shoot. We ain't come this far just to dump this thing in the drink. What's the nearest target opportunity?
The bombardier flips through a book.
If the rate of loss does not increase, we have a chance to reach target 384, grid coordinate 003691, and possibly make it from there to the Tango Delta weathership.
What kind of a target is that anyhow?
Sir, that's the ICBM complex at Kotlas.
All right. Designating new target 384. Give me a rough heading on that just as soon as you can get it worked out, will you?
In the war room.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed, Dimitri, and remember, there's just one thing. We are all in this together. We're right behind you, Dimitri. We're with you all the way. Yes, well, we'll keep the line open. All right, Dimitri. General Turgidson, is there really a chance for that plane to get through?
Mr. President, if I may speak freely, the Rusky talks big, but frankly, we think he's short of know-how. I mean, you just can't expect a bunch of ignorant peons to understand a machine like some of our boys. And that's not
the ambassador's face turns livid.
I mean, you take your average Rusky. We all know how much guts he's got. Hell, look at all of them Nazis killed off, and they still wouldn't quit.
Can't you stick to the point, General?
Well, sir,
If the pilot's good, see? I mean, if he's really sharp, he can barrel that baby in solo. I mean, you ought to see it sometime. It's a sight. A big plane, like a 52.
Stretching his arms out in maximum wingspan.
Flying chickens in the barnyard.
Yeah, but has he got a chance?
Has he got a chance? Hell yeah.
He holds his hand over his mouth. In the B-52. The navigator places a plastic insert into the navigation screen and looks through the viewfinder.
Navigator to captain, approaching target, a distance 10 miles. Switch from green grid to target orange.
Roger, ready for final bomb run check. Take over, Ace.
Roger. DSO ready.
Bombardier ready, sir.
Bomb fusing, master safety on, electronic, barometric, time and impact.
Bomb fusing, master safety's on, electronic, barometric, time and impact.
Here's flipping the switches on.
Delay factor, yellow 3.
Use for bomb with delay factor, yellow 3.
Bomb fusing circuits 1 through 4 test.
Bomb fusing circuits 1 through 4 test. Lights on.
Bomb arming test lights on 1 through 4.
Bomb arming test lights on 1 through 4.
More switches engine flipped on.
Trigger switch override.
Primary trigger switch override. Engage.
Track indicators to maximum deflection.
Track indicators to maximum deflection.
Detonator set to 0 altitude.
Detonator set to 0 altitude.
Turning a knob release counterclockwise to 0.
First safety release.
First safety.
Release second safety.
Second safety released.
Second safety.
Check bomb door circuits 1 through 4.
The door indicator light indicates closed. The bombardier jiggles the switch, but the indicator remains closed.
Bomb door circuits, negative function, lights red.
Switching backup circuits.
Roger. Backup circuits switched in, still negative function.
Engage emergency power.
Roger. Emergency power on. Still negative function.
The closed indicator light now flashing.
Operate manual override.
Roger.
The light's still flashing.
Still negative function. The teleflex drive cable must be sheared away.
Fire the explosive bolt.
Roger.
More jiggling. Still no effect.
Still negative, sir. The operating circuits are dead, sir.
Stay on the bomb run, Ace. I'm going down below and see what I can do.
Roger.
Major Kong opens trap door and goes down to the lower deck.
Boys, I'm going to get them doors open if it hairlips everybody on Bear Creek.
He climbs down into the bomb compartment. Twin bombs, both labeled nuclear warhead, handle with care, personalized respectively with the inscriptions, "Hi there," and "Dear John." Surveys the compartment with a flashlight. Loose wires in the ceiling emit sparks. He climbs atop the bomb called, "Hi there!" Straddling the bomb, he fans the sparking wires overhead with his cowboy hat.
Target orange grid reference checks. Target distance, 8 miles.
Roger, 8 miles. Telemetric guidance computer into orange grid.
Telemetric guidance computer into orange grid.
The cover on the electrical panel falls off.
Target distance, 7 miles. Correct track indicator, -7.
Roger, 7 miles. Track GPI acceleration factor.
GPI acceleration factor set.
Hung fiddles with the wires.
Target distance, 6 miles.
Roger, 6 miles. Pulse ident transponder active.
Pulse ident transponder active.
Target distance, 5 miles.
5 miles. Homing alignment factor, 0 mode.
Homing alignment factor to 0 mode.
Manipulates the wires with a pair of pliers.
Target distance, 4 miles.
Roger, 4 miles. Auto CDC into manual teleflex link.
Auto CDC into manual teleflex link.
He mops his brow.
Target distance, 3 miles.
Roger, 3 miles. Target in sight. Why in hell is Major Kong?
He sticks the pliers into a socket, and the bomb doors open below him. He holds onto his hat. The bomb falls, with him still straddling it.
Hey, what about Major Kong?
He waves his cowboy hat in the air as he and the bomb plummet to Earth towards the middle of the Soviet ICBM complex. A white flash. A mushroom cloud erupts. In the war room, Strangelove spins around in his wheelchair.
Mr. President, I would not rule out the chance to preserve a nucleus of human specimens. It would be quite easy.
Rolling toward the president and Turgidson.
At the bottom of some of our deeper mine shafts, radioactivity would never penetrate a mine some thousands of feet deep. And in a matter of weeks, sufficient improvements in dwelling space could easily be provided.
How long would you have to stay down there?
Well, let's see now.
Reaching under his suit jacket.
Cobalt thorium G.
Consulting a circular slide rule.
Radioactive half-life of... I would think that possibly 100 years.
Pulling the slide rule out of the gloved hand and placing it back under his jacket.
Could stay down there for 100 years?
It would not be difficult, mein Führer.
Grinning.
Nuclear reactors could... I'm sorry, Mr. President. Nuclear reactors could provide power almost indefinitely. Greenhouses could maintain plant life. Animals could be bred and slaughtered. A quick survey would have to be made of all the available mine sites in the country. But I would guess that dwelling space for several hundred thousand of our people could easily be provided.
Well, I would hate to have to decide who stays up and who goes down.
Well, that would not be necessary, Mr. President.
Strangelove jerks his gloved hand up.
Could easily be accomplished with a computer. And the computer could be set and programmed to accept factors from youth, health, sexual fertility, intelligence, and a cross-section of necessary skills. Of course, it would be absolutely vital that our top government and military men be included.
Turgidson sets up.
And imparts the required principles of leadership and tradition.
He bangs down his left fist, and the gloved hand rises into a Nazi salute. He grabs the right arm and pulls it back down again.
Actually, they would breed prodigiously, eh? There would be much time... and little to do.
With an enormous smile.
But with the proper breeding techniques and a ratio of, say,
10 females to each male.
Turgidson's eyes widen.
That they could then work their way back to the present gross national product within, say, 20 years.
But look here, Doctor, wouldn't this nucleus of survivors be so grief-stricken and anguished that they'd...
Again restraining his right arm.
Envy the dead and not want to go on living?
No, sir. Excuse me.
Holding his right arm in place. Now beating it into submission.
Also, when they go down into the mine, everyone would still be alive. There would be no shocking memories. And the prevailing motion will be one of nostalgia for those left behind. Combined with a spirit of bold curiosity for the adventure ahead.
Another Nazi salute. Restrained and beaten. His glove hand attacks his own throat. He bites the glove, but it returns to his neck. He struggles to pull it away.
Doctor, you mentioned the ratio of 10 women to each man. Wouldn't that necessitate the abandonment of the so-called monogamous sexual relationship? I mean, as far as men were concerned.
Regrettably, yes. But it is, you know, a sacrifice required for the future of the human race.
Turgidson and Strangelove both smiling.
Since each man will be required to do prodigious service along these lines, the women will have to be selected for their sexual characteristics, which will have to be of a highly stimulating nature.
I must confess, you have an astonishingly good idea there, Doctor.
Thank you, sir.
I think we ought to look at this from a military point of view. I mean...
The President, silent and motionless.
Supposing the Ruskies stashed away some big bombs, see, and we didn't. When they come out in 100 years, they could take over.
The ambassador walks to the back of the room.
In fact, they might even try an immediate sneak attack so they could take over our mineshaft space.
Yeah, I think it'd be extremely naive of us, Mr. President, to imagine that these new developments are going to cause any change in Soviet expansion.
The Russian kneels and secretly photographs the big board with his pocket watch.
To prevent them from taking over other mineshaft space in order to breed more prodigiously than we do, thus knocking us out in superior numbers when we emerge.
Standing up.
Mr. President, we must not allow a mineshaft gap.
Sir.
Strangelove gets up.
I have a plan.
Out of the wheelchair.
Monsieur! I can walk!
Takes a step. Bomb. After 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 bomb. Made at Shepperton Studios, England, by Hawk Films Limited. Audio description by Lou Lasher.